Hugo is one of the more senior guys on the team, and Hugo called me up randomly and put like a belt on me with a knife. Like there's a knife, like a butter knife hanging off of a belt, and it's like on a string. And then I had to like stand on a chair and like drop the knife into like the hole of a wine bottle. So it was like all just very like PG, but good initiation.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro. You just heard from Benjamin Perry, who's entering his first season on a World Tour team. This past fall, he announced that he'd be joining Astana Premier Tech. Perry and I spoke not long after the team's training camp in January in Benidorm, Spain. Fellow Canadians Hugo Uhl and Steve Bauer were there too. Before fall 2020, I thought I knew Benjamin Perry's story pretty well. I interviewed him after he won the KOM jersey at the Grand Prix Cycliste de Montréal in 2016. But I was speaking with contributing writer Sean McKinnon, who has a story about Perry in the current issue of the magazine. McKinnon made me realize just how long the 26-year-old Perry had been working away at his craft. It was some background you just don't get from a site like Pro Cycling Stats. That site might lead you to believe that Perry came up through the North American road scene. He spent 2015 and 2016 on the influential Continental Team Silber Pro and then went on to Israel Cycling Academy. But before Silber, Perry toughed it out in Europe, doing what he could to get on Belgian development outfits. His route to the World Tour was by no means direct or close to a sure thing. Perry's a good talker and very self-aware of his strengths as a cyclist and where he thinks he can go at the top levels of the sport. In our interview, he speaks about the strangeness of his team camp because of COVID precautions and also some of the zaniness there. It sounds like he made a few very smart decisions at training camp. One involved a certain bit of costume makeup that he got as part of an initiation outfit. Put it this way. There's nothing that went on at this camp that will ever come back to haunt Perry should, say, he ever become Prime Minister. So have a listen to my chat with Perry and get to know a first-year World Tour rider who's put in a lot of time on the road. Benjamin Perry, what's it like being the new guy on a UCI world team?
It's been a crazy time, especially with team camp and everything. And we normally, there's a December camp in teams where there's, you know, like the drinking and the like initiation for the new guys. And this year I kind of missed out on that kind of that stuff a little bit. We still had a bit of initiation, but it was interesting because going to team camp, I know Hugo and I know Steve Bauer, but it's not like me going to a team like Mitchelton or a Team Bike Exchange now where I know a bunch of the guys, or if there was a Canadian team or a rally, like I know a lot of the guys, but there was 110 people at our team camp in the same hotel. And it's like, this is your group you ride with. Your roommate is also in the group that you ride with in the hotel. Like you can't go to these areas. You can't sit at the table at dinner with these people. And it was really overwhelming to begin with, just having to like every single person you see, like you bump fists with and go, hi, I'm Ben. Who are you? And like, oh, I'm a doctor. Okay, cool. Hi, I'm Ben. Who are you? I'm a physio. So it was strange. It was a strange intro, but because of the COVID and like they did everything they could to make us feel welcome and happy to have us six or seven or eight new people between riders and staff. But yeah. It was good. It was fun, and they did a lot to make us feel welcome at team camp.
Just so I'm clear, were there people within the team that you couldn't sit with or you couldn't meet with?
We did three PCR tests during camp, but the theory was like we had certain tables in certain areas in the dining room, and it was a group three table. And they said, wherever you sit on day one, you sit for the full 12 days. And you can only sit with people who are also in your group, and you also have to sit with your roommate. So like in the hallway or whatever, I'd see someone and go, hi, I'm Ben. I'm a new guy. And they're like, oh, I'm Omer, or I'm Gorka or whatever. And you'd chat with them for a second or two, but you would never be like riding beside them or eating with them or at a meeting, you would never be like sitting right beside them. You know, everything was pretty divided up that way, which it makes things a bit unnatural for meeting people, but it's kind of the protocol they needed to do to establish a bit of safety for COVID and the whole situation. But luckily there was, out of the 330 tests or more they did at camp, there was never a positive. So it worked.
And will those groups continue throughout the year, or was that just for the camp that you were in, group one, two, or three, or whatever?
That was purely just for camp. So going forward, the UCR rules for World Tour races are you have a test 6 days out, a test 3 days out, and then you're good to go. And I think a lot of the races, it depends, I think, organization to organization, but I've heard stories about like at the Giro, it wasn't apparently so good last year. But with the tour, it was like your staff, your riders, you will always be in a hotel with this other team and this other team, no matter what. So at races, it's going to be, yeah, everyone from Astana is in the same bubble with one, two, three, however many more other teams. It's going to be with your team guaranteed, you're going to be fine. It's just going to be a bit different where, like, if I have a friend at a race from another team, obviously I'll see him in the peloton, but maybe if he's at the same hotel as me, I won't be allowed to like go to his room and hang out and have a chat. The one thing that kind of sucks too is I have an aunt in Ottawa who wanted to come see me and tour in Saudi Arabia because she's a friend who lives there. And she wanted to come see me. And I was like, well, if you can come see your friend and come see me, but seeing me might mean like there's no spectators allowed at the race. You can't like quote unquote burst the bubble and I can't like go out for dinner with you. You can't come to the team hotel. I can't like give you a hug after the stage is over or at the stage start, because then maybe you have COVID, maybe I bring it into the team, and then maybe the team can't start the race. There's all just those kind of little things that are making it a bit harder. But for teams, for sure, like if your whole team is in the same bubble as you, you're kind of in the same boat.
You mentioned initiations. What did that look like this year at Astana Premier Tech during the January team camp?
Well, we all got dressed up in costumes they bought for us. I was, I mean, Europe is a bit of a different place than Canada, but mine was a North African, I would say, priest or North African religious figure. And the outfit, even, I don't even know if this will make the podcast, but the outfit came with like a little makeup kit so you could do blackface. And I just kind of said, I'm just going to throw this part of the outfit in the garbage because I'm sorry. Like if you're going to make me drink something or you're going to make me jump in the pool or I don't know, I'm down. Like I'll do it. Like I'm not going to be, I want to be all in for the initiation, but I'm not going to put like makeup on. And like, nobody cared. Like nobody was like, no, you got to do it. They're like, yeah, that's a bit old school, but it's just funny that you can buy a costume still in Spain that comes with the blackface kit, which I thought was ridiculous. But yeah, all the new guys dressed up. Steve Bauer was Popeye, and we all just put on an outfit. They made us march into the dinner. It was like a fancier dinner that night, and everyone was kind of sat at the tables, but all the new guys kind of sat in a similar area and just walked in, did a little parade. Everyone's laughing and clapping. Do a speech standing on a chair, and then you have to chug a glass of wine. But I've heard it can be a lot crazier than that at the December camp. But I think that's kind of amongst the boys, no leaking what they make you do at a December camp. But I didn't get to do the December camp this year. But no, it was good. And then they had some game, and like Hugo is one of the more senior guys on the team. And Hugo called me up randomly and put like a belt on me with a knife. Like there's a knife, like a butter knife hanging off of a belt, and it's like on a string. And then I had to like stand on a chair and like drop the knife into like the hole of a wine bottle. So it was like all just very like PG, but good initiation. Chug a glass of wine and do some like proverbial sex move when you drop a butter knife into a hole. And the sort of, I don't know where you see that kind of stuff. If like you go on a holiday to Cancun or something, maybe they make you do that on a, as like a, as a, as an entertainment event at the hotel or something, or as an icebreaker, like, oh, let's make him do something that like vaguely resembles something sexual and it'll be so funny. But then I did it real easily and I was kind of like, what does this say about me? If I'm good at squatting and like lowering a butter knife into like the top of a wine glass, it was very rogue, but funny. And then, yeah, of course, they get you a bit lubed up with a few glasses of wine here and there, and just guys coming around filling up your glass, and they're like, okay, they want you to, they're trying to give you a bit of Dutch courage, so you maybe make a little bit of a fool of yourself, but then people kind of know where you stand. So it was good fun, and like obviously we trained hard, and we got the nutritionist, and we got everything, like everything's super dialed, and it's just really nice to see that at the end of the day, they're like, okay, we trained really hard, and we have like this day tomorrow, whatever, and everything was kind of planned around. Tomorrow's a hard training day, so let's have a few glasses of wine tonight so you're nice and fueled up for tomorrow's training. And like the team, like GMs and like Vinokurov and stuff, like, oh, how are you feeling? Like, what happened after the party last night? Like, you didn't drink too much, did you? It's like, no, I'm ready. I'm ready for training today, and let's go.
Does everyone arrive at camp fit?
This is something that I think I personally I think I'm good at is – in camp, and like this is true with every team in the world. Like it can be true with when I was in Silber, when I was in an amateur Belgian team. There's people of different varying levels of fitness, but I'm never one who really like plays the game with like the half wheeling randomly and like riding way harder than other guys in recovery days and riding harder despite like who's in the car following the group that day. It was actually really fun because we had the camps, like since we were in the bubbles, they didn't want to have too many groups. So we had three groups of 10. And since it's groups of 10, we just did tons of testing, tons of intervals. Because if you're a group of 10 rolling around, it's really hard to have like a quality 5-6 hour base ride. Because if you're sitting in the wheel 82% of the time, you're probably not going to be pushing so much power. So it's like ride 1 hour, do like a 30 minute climb with this zone for you. And I noticed like throughout the camp, there was a lot of guys in my group particularly who would like get passed by someone in an interval. And then they'd go, okay, well, Ben passed me or so-and-so passed me, so I'm just going to keep doing the climb with them. So if the people in the car see us following, like it's like a pride thing, they'd be like, oh, I'm just going to ride with, do the interval with them because I'm as strong as this guy or I'm stronger than this guy. And I would kind of just stop for a pee before every interval and then just do the interval at like exactly what they said. And then you'd kind of see people like exploding by the end of camp and guys would like be like, oh, I'm effed up. I'm going to turn around and go home and ride short. And then the last day there was a race. So the race was kind of, and the race was like 5.5 hours into a ride. So it was good. But then at the same time, there's the older, like obviously Jakob Fuglsang kind of runs the show in a lot of ways. He's very mature and he's been around the block a few times and he knows what he needs. And he was actually a really good leader to see at camp. And Hugo is the same, where it's kind of, not that those two guys weren't in my group, but it's nice to see that people kind of just stick to the plan. And there seemed like for the most part, there's a good understanding of if pro cycling was based off of who's the strongest guy on a training ride or who has the most Stravas, like there's a lot of guys like myself included, number one, where if it was based on that kind of stuff, like I would be racing Cat 4 in Ontario. Like I'm not a tester. Like I'm not a guy who has, I'm not a physiological anomaly. And training camp was really good for that sense where a lot of guys were overdoing it and blowing up. And then we do a race and then the race kind of really shows where you're at. And training is training. You know, it's like you want to get out of the camp what they tell you to do. And if you overdo it, you could screw up a couple of your days because you went too hard. I mean, it's hard to know levels of fitness too, because there's guys on the team who've won a Grand Tour stage every year for 5 years. And then there's guys like me who've won like Tour of Korea stuff. I'm not trying to poo-poo myself, but there's like the how good are you on Microsoft Excel and how good are you on Pro Cycling Stats, and training is training. And like honestly this is me getting sidetracked here, but I remember when I was on Silber and with Ryan Roth, and like Ryan Roth was a big dog, he was a hitter, and there was days in training camp where he'd be like, I've done too much or I'm tired, and he would like put the bike on the roof and get in the car and do the last hour of training in the car. That was like a huge, honestly, that stuck with me really well, being teammates with Ryan Roth and feeling like I learned something from him. Because it's like, if you're going to argue who's a better cyclist, like Rider X, who won the hill race, or Ryan Roth, it's Ryan Roth. Like he's won things and he's accomplished things and he knows himself and he goes like, nah, I'm not in good shape right now, or I'm here in my training. And I think the team was all around like a pretty good, responsible team where guys were like, nah, this is too much for me.
Yeah, that definitely takes a certain level of maturity. And I mean, it's really hard, just speaking as a cat, whatever, master's rider that I am, like you want to chase down a wheel, no matter whose wheel it is sometimes, even though you don't need to and you shouldn't. So that, I guess that comes just with maturity, which it sounds like Fuglsang has and Uhl has, and it's no surprise there because they've been at it a while. One of your new teammates, so to speak, is, you mentioned him already, Steve Bauer. He's now sport director at Astana Premier Tech. You're both from St. Catharines, Ontario. Steve grew up nearby in Fenwick. Tell me more what links you guys have thanks to that common hometown.
One of the first things that was really funny is since we have a new Canadian sponsor in the team, including two new Canadians, Steve and myself, we had a photographer come in, like a big wig cycling photographer who did all the team photos on the press day. And he was like, okay, all the Kazakhs in the photo. And there's like three directors and a mechanic and a couple of soigneurs and nine riders. And they all go in, they're taking the different photos. And he's like, okay, like now a photo for all the Canadians. And it's like Hugo, Steve, and I. And he like turned around and was like, all the Canadians now, come on, Canadians, let's go. Photo time for the Canadians. And then we're like, bro, that's just three of us. And he was like, what? It's a 50-50 Canadian Kazakh team and there's only three Canadians and there's 20 Kazakhs. And we're like, yeah, like that's just how it is right now. And he was like, oh, okay. But the team got some photos of me with just Steve. And actually, fun fact, out of the 110 people between riders and staff, Steve Bauer and I are the only two people in the entire Astana family who are English as the first language. And that's really tested my Italian comprehension and Spanish speaking skills and Dutch speaking skills. And I think this team is going to be really good for my language ability, because like we have one South African. And I mean, obviously, there was kind of three groups at camp too for a lot of the meetings where it's like, okay, the guy from Eritrea, the guy's from Denmark, the guy's from Canada. We'll do the meetings in English because that's like the majority language you understand. But there's very few people in the team who are confident / like super competent with their English skills. So I thought like that was so interesting, like talking to Steve, like, wow, like I know exactly where you live in my hometown. I've been to your house. My best friend growing up lives like three doors down from where you still live. And it's just such a small world thing. And yeah, but I mean, for me personally, like I've known Steve, basically I was just got into mountain biking like on a whim when I was like maybe 15, did a couple races, needed to train on the road. Was on the road with the Planet Energy guys, and I thought they were so cool. And Steve would come out for some St. Catharines Club rides, and I remember the St. Catharines Energy or the Planet Energy guys based in St. Catharines would be like, "All right, Perry, like get in the wheel," and then like give me a lead out or something. Like I would now to any random 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid who just like popped up on my wheel who wanted a race or wanted to do a little sprint like just for fun, and that's what really got me hooked. So it feels like a really full circle moment where I wasn't sure about road cycling and I was doing a bit of mountain biking. And then I saw how cool Spider Tech was and Planet Energy was, and it's in St. Catharines. And I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And they go to France and race and doing Tour Swiss and all these things I'd never heard of. And then obviously like that team folded while I was still a junior. But it's just weird now being in the Astana kit with Steve 6,000K maybe away from St. Catharines. And just like, wow, this is bizarro. That here I am, and he's a boss, and he's a mentor, and he's always kind of been a mentor, obviously, and been an inspiration, and just sending photos to my grandma who like remembers following him when she was younger, and be like, wow, there's this great road cyclist from our town, and like there's been banners of his face like in our downtown of like famous Canadians. It's like Linda Evangelista and Harriet Tubman, and just different people who have been famous in St. Catharines, and like his face like on banners downtown, and like me being in high school, like just being on a road bike and be like, I ride bikes with that guy, the guy on the banner. And now I'm like in a Kazakh Canadian team with him on a training camp in Spain. And it's just, yeah, it's small world.
Will he be your sport director like directly in any races in 2021?
It's to be confirmed. And even like I thought I knew what my calendar was, but with a lot of cancellations and stuff that are happening and sort of like the continuing effects of COVID on the calendar, it's still hard to know. Cause I was going to do a race, but it was canceled. Then now I'm supposed to do, as of right now, I'm supposed to do UAE tour, which is going to be the world tour, like opening for the year. But still waiting to see, because if that race happens or not, I have no idea. And like, even still, maybe some guys are doing the Giro need to race more than I do this early. So maybe they'll take my spot, or I don't know how it's going to happen. But I do think Steve will do a lot of the cobbled classics because he was really good at those. And I believe he did those with CCC. So I'm currently slated to do all of the cobbled classics, except for maybe opening weekend, because I'll be in Paris-Nice or Tirreno Adriatico. But even still, like, all can be changed. But I'm hoping I'll do a lot of races with him. And I think I will, because I think we're kind of similar style riders.
Tell me more about your relationship with the early spring classics. You have some experience there that goes back quite a few years.
It's really interesting now in cycling, like looking at what powers you do and your repeatability and different things like that. And I've had, even if it doesn't show up so much on pro cycling stats or wherever, I've done a lot of those kind of cobbled races in my first years as a pro, where I was effective as a teammate and getting through races fine and doing well and being in good splits and always being there to sort of help and try to position someone else. And it kind of takes away from the personal success side of it. But I think it kind of suits my profile when it's hard all day, bad weather, a lot of short, intense efforts, and then a lot of times a lot of recovery. So yeah, I like getting down and dirty and smashing it over the cobbles. And we have really good equipment and everything's like very well taken care of. So I think it's the place I'm most likely to shine, just based on all those sort of things. I mean, I don't know what else to say on it, because I think just like my size naturally and my sort of style of riding, it's just where I kind of slot in. And it's I guess it's also one of those things too, where there's a lot of guys where if you're a junior or U23 and you want to be world tour, like, you got to be good at everything. Like junior, nationals, TT, I would be like fifth or fourth, and the road race I'd be third. And as you get older and older and older, the things you realize what you're good at gets smaller and smaller and smaller, because you can be, as a junior in Canada, you can be, I'm good at everything, or I'm decent at everything, or I'm just a sprinter. And as the guys who are only think they're good at one thing, it seems a lot of times fizzle out. And the guys who kind of go the full package are kind of good at everything. But then, yeah, obviously as you get older, what I've kind of realized is I'm good at is one day races that are hard, no gigantic climbs, not a ton of climbing, but maybe a decent amount of climbing, or at least climbing spread out. And also the other big part of this too is Astana is a team full of climbers. And like, I realized that at training camp, like, there's a lot of guys who really are climbers, want to be climbers. So it's actually, I'm in a really good place with this team where they're like, yeah, you can go to Paris-Roubaix and be the leader, or like not the leader, but you're not going to be killing yourself and pulling out after 150K because you've done a job for someone who can win. It's like, it's going to be a bit more open, which is something that's I've never had before. And I'm really excited about, because it can give me a chance to see where I'm at and see how I can do when I'm just trying to get a result for myself and for the team, and not falling on the sword.
That sounds like Paris-Roubaix could be potentially a good experience for you if that's the arrangement. Is Paris-Roubaix, say, a favorite of yours, or do you have a favorite or a classic that has really captured your imagination?
I've always really loved the idea of like Tour of Flanders and Amstel Gold. I think, and Brabant's Appeal is one I've done in the past, where I'm like, wow, I really, really believe in myself. If I can step my level up and get better and have time and years and a couple kicks to the can, these are the kind of races I can do well at. And I mean, it's such a different ball game to compare it to the classic stage one of Saguenay, or the last stage of Beauce, or the races I have won in the past, where it's a ton of 2 to 5 minute efforts and just hard all day, or there's a potential for crap weather. And I think it's those kind of races where if I took what I'm good at and stretched it to a potential that I need to believe in myself and see in myself, those are the places I can be irreplaceable in cycling. Like, I'll never be irreplaceable. I mean, this is, I don't want to never say never, obviously, but like as a GC rider or as a time trialist, or it's things where I haven't struck gold, but there's been on a lower level in races that kind of reflect those things, I've been good. So I think Flanders and Amstel and Brabant's Appeal and these kind of lumpy, not crazy climbing races is what I can be good at.
You mentioned how your profile in pro cycling stats may appear, and may appear to maybe the, or I'm extrapolating a bit, but how it may appear to the casual browser. And I was looking at it recently. If you just looked at the teams, you would think, oh, Benjamin Perry started in North America on Silver Pro, went to Europe with Israeli Cycling Academy, and now is at the World Tour level. But there's a lot there that isn't maybe as obvious. Like, you have results going back to 2011 and when you were 17. So remind us what you were doing in 2011 and even 12 and 13.
Well, 2011 would have been first year junior, and I raced Abitibi. And then after Abitibi, we did like a pre-Worlds camp with Cycling Canada, and we did Kermesses in Belgium. And I won the last Kermess we did. And it was, this is one thing I'd love to like say to young guys is go to Belgium, do Kermesses and believe that you're strong enough and you just need to learn something. Because I went and like, I went for cyclocross a year before that as a cadet. And it was like, I will never make it in cycling. Oh my God, I am so bad at this. What should I do in university? What's the next move here? And by the end of the trip, I like figured out the formula and I won a race. So that was 2011. And then 2012, in that race that I won, actually, I met a guy and he was like, come live with me if you want. And he's on Intermarché, like Wanty Gobert now. He's like racing across worlds for Belgium.
Is this Quentin Hermans?
Quentin Hermans, yeah. So I was living with him and he kind of said, come back and stay with me. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. And I remember talking to my family and stuff, and I was going to go to Brock. I did go to Brock in the end for about a year, but I was like, oh, I have a chance to do cycling, but it like does not work with doing university. What should I do? And like my dad, who's very, very like school. And I talked to my grandma and everyone who kind of had been mentoring me in life at that point. And then my grandma, my dad, my mom, everyone was just go to Belgium, like go fly to Belgium, stay with this family and race a bunch. And if it's something you love and you want to explore more, like do it. Like you can do school when you're 25. You can do school when you're 19. You can do school when you're 30. It doesn't matter, but you'll never have this chance again. And then I went and stayed with him, did a bunch of small races at first. And then I think I won like four out of the first five I did. And I got attention from a team, just like a small team called Sportenstund Leopoldsberg. And then I went with them and did a UCI race and was second on the stage and won the KOM jersey, and then did some more Kermesses and won a couple more. And then I had an opportunity to go to the Lotto, what is now Lotto Soudal. It was Lotto Belisol when I raced there. I raced for Lotto Belisol, U23. Now it's Lotto Soudal. But yeah, I raced with them for a year and it was a huge eye opener because that was up until that point, I'd just been like what they would call a fat Canadian, just winning Kermesses and stuff. And then they tried to like mold me, and then they're like, well, hot team camp in Spain. I have a race bike and a training bike. And like, oh, wow, you're giving me like a suitcase and like a track suit. Like, this is crazy. Like, I'm just used to racing for National Cycling Center Hamilton, and I just have whatever, like I have what I need. And I did the first year U23, and it was a huge, like I was saying, like it's a huge eye opener just to see like how the Belgians are and how serious they are and how intense they are and the way they operate. And it was a lot of fun that year. But then in the end, they told me I could stay. And then in December, it was one of those kind of teams where they're like, yeah, you're fine. But there's no contract. And then in December, I was like already planning to go back. And they're like, no, actually, we're not going to have you in the team next year. I was like, ah, okay. Well, I'll go back to Belgium anyways. And I found a different team to ride for. So I raced for a team called Bege Mibeporten Indelec in 2013 or 2014. And then things were pretty good in that team. But then we had a bit of disagreements. And then I could have stepped up to a continental team in Europe at that point. And then I was going to do a stagiaire with Rally in a race in Brazil, but then the race was canceled. And then I was going to race Alberta with Silber. In the end, I raced with Cycling Canada. But it was one of those, that was kind of like, that's a moment where I look back and I go, I loved my time on Silber. I cannot say enough positive things about my experience in that team and how much fun we all had as a bunch of boys. But I had an opportunity to go to the feeder team for Quickstep for 2015. They were like meeting me and they were like really wanted me to come. But then like my two experiences with the Belgian teams before were they promised me one thing or they told me one thing and then something else happened. And I was like, wow, this changes so much. I made an agreement and then they backed out on the agreement at a certain point. And I was just feeling so disgruntled with Belgium. And I remember meeting Scott McFarlane from Silber in the elevator in Alberta. And he was like kind of looking at me and I was looking at him and this is the year where I was eighth at nationals and, won the U23 road race for the first time. And I was kind of like, he was looking at me and I was like, who is this guy? But I'd been emailing him a bit. And then as he was getting out of the elevator, I remember him turning around and being like, Ben Perry, right? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I'm Scott. I'm the guy who's been emailing you about Silver. I'm like, oh, okay, wow. And he's like, yeah, we'd like love to have you and blah, blah, blah. And like, let's chat someday. And I remember feeling like he really valued me and he was very like nice to me and polite to me. And we want to improve cycling in Canada and I want to help you. And I'm like, wow, I've not heard this before. I've just kind of been a pawn. And that was one of the things that swayed me from, I'm like, wow, I can make a couple $100 a month and race on this team and travel around North America and we'll probably win some stuff. And we got a good team. We'll have a good team. And that was the moment where from then on, I guess my history is well documented, but that was the moment where I was like, this guy cares. And this guy, Scott, like he knows, and we'll have Gord Fraser as a DS and he's a good guy. And their victory at the end of the day is me having a successful career. It's not, how do other guys in the team, or are other guys on the team mad about this? Or do people care about that? It's just, what do you need, Ben? Like, we want to help you, and helping you helps us. And not that we're doing it to get, we're not trying to like milk you for what you're worth, but we just want to have a good team, have a good time, have a good group of guys. And that's not something I'd seen before since I was on NCCH. So I think that was a big turning point for me around 2015, end of 2014.
Earlier, you mentioned a KOM jersey you won while you're still a young rider. You have a few KOM jerseys to your name. You won the KOM at the Tour of Alberta in 2015, and then you won the King of the Mountain competition at the Grand Prix Cycliste de Montréal in 2016. You've also said you're not really a climber type. What is your relationship with the KOM prize and your just general skills, specialties as a cyclist?
It's a funny one to answer because a lot of people do think still that the KOM jersey is the best climber in the race. But the one that I won in Belgium was in Liège. It was a race, Tour of Liège and the junior race. And it's just one of those ones where the climbs are only 10 minutes long max. And like Montreal, it's, if you're in the break, you get the jersey. And it was Matteo Delsin and I, and him and I love being in breakaways with him. There's probably been 5 or 6 times in UCI races where there's been breakaways where it just comes down to him and I together. And we just have this really good partnership and brotherhood where we know how strong the other one is and how hard we can ride and how we can work together. And I know like when Matteo says like, oh, or like I said to Matteo, like, let's rip it until the last moment. I know he's not holding on thinking like, oh, I got to save something to beat Ben in this sprint, or I got to do this or I got to do that. Like he's just an honest guy and he's a guy I trust. And I think he feels the same way about me. And that's how I got the KOM jersey in Montreal. And the race in Belgium was just being in the break the first day and being like an excited kid, not knowing how things are different. And I remember Gord with Silver was like, the KOM jersey doesn't matter. The KOM jersey doesn't matter. It's a joke jersey. And obviously that's not true when you're a continental team in a point one race like Alberta. I think Alberta was just everyone go for the break on day one. I was in the break on day one. And it's a bit different when everyone's riding together, cooperating, and then you just kind of race the last 500 meters a kilometer of a climb. And that's where, versus a lot of climbers, I'm actually in a good position where there's guys who'll beat me in the sprint who weigh a lot more than I do. And there's guys who'll beat me in the climb who weigh a lot less than I do. But for my kind of like Amstel to Flanders kind of 70 kilo package kind of guy, it's hard to drop me, I think, in a breakaway situation on a climb. And the guys who would try to drop me, I can beat in the sprint. So I found myself on a few occasions in the past, but it's been a few years since I won a KOM jersey now. Alberta might have been the last one.
Maybe Montreal, I think, yeah.
Or Montreal. Montreal was like whatever, 2016, I guess.
Yeah. I remember reading Gord Fraser's comment about the KOM jersey. He though, admitted his bias. He's a green jersey kind of guy, and I think he softened his stance maybe shortly after you won the KOM in Alberta.
Yeah. He has his views, and he was a rough and tough sprinter back in the day. And I don't know. I do definitely agree with him that it's kind of obviously like overall sprint and young are kind of in this, like, depending on who you ask, sprint or young, what one's better than the other. And then KOM is normally like the fourth tier jersey. But I mean, as a 20-year-old racing for Silver and Tour of Alberta, and it's on TV and people are really following along, it's like, wow, it's really nice to be called up to the start line and you feel special. Although it's not like it's 120 people are trying to take that, or like however many guys in the peloton, it's not like they're all trying to take that jersey off of you. It's after 1 or 2 days, it's like there's 3 other people who maybe have a chance of getting it now. So it's a bit funny in that sense, where like the sprint jersey can be a guy was third on the first stage and was going to break another day and won, and then another guy's been winning every single bunch sprint. And there's a lot of people who can kind of chime in on that sort of conversation where the KOM jersey, you see it in the Tour de France. It's like by stage 15, there's one person who's not a GC rider, who's like head and shoulders above everyone. And then there's one random guy who's going for GC who's like creeping in because he's like coming second on a summit finish, winning a summit finish, passing these huge climbs and not even caring about the KOM jersey as they go over the top of the climb and picking up points and like closing in on the leader of the KOM jersey, just inadvertently. Whereas the races I've won, it's been for KOM jersey. I mean, it's like I've been in the break and been sort of unchallenged. Now, as in unchallenged, not as in like, I'm so great, nobody can challenge me. As unchallenged as in everyone else is like, look at this idiot going for the KOM point still. What is he doing? That kind of unchallenged. No one could care less, sort of unchallenged. I just wanted to clarify.
I like that. I'm going to get that clarification in. That's pretty funny. Your previous team, the one that you wrapped up with in 2020, was Israel Cycling Academy. You were with them since, I think, 2017. How did your position in that team evolve throughout those years?
It was a big experience being in that team, because when I joined the team, it was 16 riders, a smallish Pro Conti team. They approached me after Saguenay in my last year U23 when I was in silver. Israel approached me after the race, and I think they asked Guillaume. So I got to give him some credit. Like, what's this Perry kid like? He's good. We want to sign him. And Guillaume must have given them the like, yeah, seems like a good guy. He was really strong at U23 Nationals a couple years ago when I did it with him, and he's won it a few times. And pretty safe bet if you want to sign a young guy. So they gave me a chance, and when I first got there, it was the first year Sylvan Adams was sponsoring the team as well. And when I came in, the team was like, we're only going to take guys from small countries who haven't got to race Nations Cups, who haven't had opportunities, who have been doing it like you have been, like living in a hostel in Belgium and surviving on $5,000 Canadian a year and eating rice, minute rice, and riding to the races and doing what you can with what you have, and not signing riders from like France and Belgium and Netherlands and wherever, where if you're good, someone discovers you. It's like, it's the equivalent of me being a hockey player from Japan. Like, you have to graft really, really, really hard to make it to the NHL. Or if you're a super talented 6-year-old in Canada, there's somebody trying to be your friend. There's somebody trying to help you. And Israel's kind of message from the first year was, wow, like, you've made it from Canada. You did like 5 months a year on the indoor trainer to try and be a good road cyclist. Like, most people in most sports would give up. They would be like, screw this. Like, why am I riding on a computer? Why am I driving an hour and a half to Hamilton or to Forest City Velodrome to be able to ride inside or to be able to ride like not on a trainer? That was when I first joined the team, and it was small, and the team grew really fast. And every year they were adding people and kind of changing the tune on what was the goals, what was the ambitions, like what do we stand for? And then at the end of the day, it just kind of, I definitely needed to change the scenery, and I'm really thankful for everything that I got there. And I have a lot of friends there, and I like love all the staff there, and everything was, I have really, really no complaints, but I definitely was there from the entire transition from Continental team becoming Pro Conti, stepping up to a bigger role, adding riders, and then getting to the World Tour. So it was interesting because it's something that's hard to do no matter what, like no matter how experienced you are. Like, not a lot of people have walked teams from Continental to World Tour, and in such a short span, like 4 years. So I think part of me was a bit upset at sometimes about how things were changing and how views were changing, and I was like, oh, that's not what you said last month, or that's not this or that. But the team's in a really good place now. You can see like they have Froome, and they have a lot of like really good riders this year who they've added, and all I can say is it was a really good experience, and I'm really happy for the experience. And I kind of feel like I was along for the ride for a lot of the time and just getting to see it firsthand.
For 2021, you're on your new team, Astana Premier Tech. What is a goal of yours, not necessarily a race goal or like a results goal, I should say, but what is a goal that you have for this year?
In cycling, and I saw this in my previous team, but you see there's a lot of guys who they talk a lot or they try to throw people in the bus. And this is not like them saying people in the team, but you see people in other teams and you see people in the sport who like do everything to build themselves up. And with Astana Premier Tech, I can already tell that if you do a job and you do it well and you're a good worker and you're a good person and you're like nice to be around, that can make you unreplaceable. Like that can make you a big part of the team. And I think for myself personally, there's a big role to fill that I can fill, where the team is filled with climbers and filled with incredibly talented riders, and they don't always have like somebody ride in the wind and do the crosswinds and help on the flats and survive over climbs and help after. And I mean, I'm not the kind of guy who goes out being like, I'm going to win so many races and I'm going to do this. Like if you gave me an option of you race for one more year, but you win three big races, or you race for 12 more years and you're loved and respected and your teammates see you as irreplaceable, like that's what I want for my cycling career. And I think I can find my niche in this team and this setting and how the team is. It's very established and they're not changing riders very much. It's a lot of like sometimes people leave for more money or they go somewhere else for a different opportunity or a change of scenery. And there's not a lot of guys who get kicked out. There's not a lot of guys who fall out with the team. So I really just want to be this guy where I can go to races and have the big leaders say, wow, like I'm so happy Ben was here, because Ben for the first 150K helped me save so much energy, and he brought me to the front and he got bottles and he talked me up and whatever. Like I want to be the kind of guy where like I'm not hyper competitive. Like you meet a lot of people in sports, and like especially high end sports, who whether you're playing cards or video games or whatever, it's like I have to win at all costs. But I've never been that guy in my life. I've obviously winning's a ton of fun, but I'm so happy just to ride my bike, and I'm not trying to step on anyone's neck to keep a job or to make myself look good. Like if I just want to ride around and like, okay, the classics might be a different story, where my dream season would be race very well in the classics, make the team understand or prove to myself, even like do it for myself and my friends and my family, and be like, I am capable of doing big things and good things in the right races for me when I have the freedom to go for it and to send it. And like, I didn't get here by accident. Like it's been a lot of work and a lot of time. And now I'm here in the races where I have the freedom and that's good for me. And I also want to be the guy where the other 80% of the time, bam, like this is your job. This is what you have to do. And I just want to nail it and like nail my job and never be the guy who's like finishing 15th at some race and be like, oh yeah, 15th is pretty good. I'd rather it be like, they tell you to sometimes like at this level, people don't understand. This is why I was talking about the whole pro cycling stats thing, is you have like a finish line as a helper, where it's like, Ben, do this job until here. And then Jakob or Alexi or whoever is going to go off and do their thing and maybe win the race. And there are other teams where everyone races for themselves and everyone is kind of selfish. And I'm like, I don't ever want to be that guy. I wouldn't sleep well at night if I was half-assing my job to try to get myself a result that isn't the result that is going to attract like a big sponsor or like make the team grow in stature. Like no one's going to scroll through the results and be like, oh wow, Ben was 29th at this really hard race. Like, wow, he's pretty strong. Like I'd rather be a DNF and my teammate win and finish the race, get on the bus and have that teammate who won like give me a big hug and went like, oh, like Ben, the job you did today, I couldn't have done it without the effort you put in, the work you put in, like what you delivered today made my ability to win so much greater. And thank you. And I'm really happy that I had you here at the race. And that's kind of my goal. It's hard to quantify. Like you don't see that anywhere. You see that on Twitter or Instagram, maybe if they go shout out to my boy for helping me get this win or whatever. But that's really what I want to cultivate this year, is I want to be irreplaceable as a helper and as someone who's there for the guys who can win.
Well, Ben, I hope you get your chances to do all of that, because, and I say that because it is such an uncertain season. You know, it probably will be like last year, and we'll see what racing actually happens. But good luck this year, and I hope to be chatting with you again.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. Thanks for having me, and fingers crossed that we have a bit more normal of a year in 2021 than we did in 2020.
And that's the episode. It's written and edited by me,
Matthew Piaro. I had help from web editors Terry McCall and Lily Hansen-Gillis. The podcast is produced by Adam Killick. He composed the music too. Thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. And thank you for listening. Please rate and review the show. Ride safely, whether indoors or out, and I'll talk to you later.